First, since schools began closing their doors because of the coronavirus, colleges and universities started putting less weight on standardized tests because in many cases, kids couldn't take them. As the pandemic wore on, more schools followed with test optional policies, some for a year, others two or three. And even before coronavirus, some schools were moving away from the ACT and SAT. McCall Kurlander is a professor and chair of the School of Education at the University of California, Davis. She focuses on education policy and evaluation. McCall, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure.
What has been leading some colleges and universities to start backing away from exams like the ACT and SAT in recent years?
In the most recent year, it's obviously the uncertainty of having the test and amidst our pandemic. And so that would be probably the reason we're seeing a lot of activity in this area in this past year. But I think in years prior to that, as we've seen this, it would be because of critiques that that the SAT or the ACT is not providing the information that colleges desire and understanding students' potential for college success, or that it's really overlapped with what they might learn from grades or other sources of information. And then probably a greater concern over equity, and that is that the tests that some students might underperform or have less access to preparation materials or to test prep and retake opportunities in a way that disadvantages certain groups. And makes the test less accessible and less predictive for some subgroups more than others.
The selling point of the ACT and SAT, as I understand it anyway, is that it's supposed to predict the potential for success for that high school student going into college. Do we know if that works out? Is there enough research to where we could say, yeah, it does, or no, it doesn't?
Yeah, there is enough research that suggests that the SATs and the ACTs do predict first-year college success above and beyond high school grades, and that is why they have been used by so many colleges for so long. So, yes, they do have predictive power. The question is, you know, of course, how much, and is it, you know, is the sort of benefit of the additional predictive power above and beyond grades and other inputs, you know, outweigh the cost that others, that, you know, critics of these tests propose, such as equity or the equity and access to the test and to test prep and to other sources of information, and to the fact that we continue to sort of see disparities on these tests. So again, that's not necessarily because of the test so much as sort of what these tests are also picking up about students' prior academic and schooling opportunities.
Right. So if I'm hearing you right, that test might show that I'm going to be good in college, but it may be that I have the educational and maybe financial resources that make me good at the test. And that's the same reason I'm going to do well in college. The test just is an indicator of those underlying differences, socioeconomic differences between people. Is that a possibility?
That is not just a possibility. That's exactly right. You just hit it on the nail. That's exactly what it picks up. That's correct.
If I am a college or university, I guess, admissions person, what do I look to replace the ACT or SAT, either this year because of COVID or because I want to get rid of it altogether?
Yeah, I think you're looking for, multiple sources of information on how students are going to perform. And I think we've probably too long relied on sort of first year grades as the only measure. We want to make sure these students are able to perform and do college level coursework. And so their grades continue to be the single best sources of that information. But people worry about sort of, courses looking different across different schools and grades also not necessarily capturing that. So I think you also want to think about taking grades in the context of students' access to quality and curricula and rigorous college level prep in their high schools. And so taking grades in conjunction with, for example, school rank or other kind of access to, like I said, more advanced coursework, IP courses, dual enrollment courses, international baccalaureate programs. And so you want to think about sort of the quality of that high school experience, not just the grades and performance, but the quality of those courses. We care a lot about what students are doing when they're not in school, other activities, investment of time, whether it's to support their families or to play an instrument or sports, right? So we care about sort of, colleges often care about what students are bringing in for broader kind of the campus community beyond just how they're going to perform academically, but also their sort of maturity and other aspects about their lives that would suggest that they would perform well in college. And so sometimes those extracurriculars matter too. And, you know, standardized tests may still play a role, whether it's the SAT or ACT or other tests that that states use for their accountability systems that can also be considered.
If I'm trying to assess the value of the high school experience, the rigorous coursework, the extracurriculars, doesn't that risk the same problem that kid in the wealthy school district might have a better funded calculus program or orchestra program or whatever, better access to the sort of things I'm looking for?
Absolutely, yes. And not only that, but I think the fear around sort of access to test prep and test opportunities could be applied to any of those other inputs, right? So if we think that one of the reasons we have standardized tests is because we wanted to standardize sort of access. But, you know, if people can sort of gain that and get, you know, advance their test scores, they can also advance sort of other extracurricular activities. And so I think for any input we use, we're going to want to pay attention very carefully that it isn't weighted too heavily and that there are important sort of tests for sort of how the distribution of who benefits from certain inputs matters a lot if we're trying to make sure we reduce inequality in access by income and by race, ethnicity. In terms of your question about high schools, it's actually why the high school context matters. We know that there's a lot of differences between schools in access to quality curriculum as well as within schools. And so what you're trying to do is make sure that you account for both differences between those resources that exist across communities and high schools and the students they serve. And also within the high school, our students taking in very competitive colleges, we want to make sure students are basically availing themselves to the most rigor they could get given the context that they're in.
We're talking to McCall Kurlander, professor and chair of the School of Education at the University of California, Davis, looking at the ACT, the SAT, and college admissions. Some schools have been moving away from those standardized exams, a lot more doing so, as she says, during the COVID-19 outbreak and the disruptions that that has caused. McCall, I'm asking questions in one broad brush, but there might be a big difference in what, say, a very selective, I don't know, Ivy League school is looking for versus that local community college. Is it not fair to take a one-size-fits-all approach, I guess, like I've been doing here?
Yeah, I would say that we've spent a lot of time focused on these tests because of the competitive environment. It's very selective schools. But the fact is the majority of Americans are going to college in much more broad access, open access institutions, where these play much, are much less significant in their impacts on college admissions.
The idea of the standardized tests, I think, again, was to have an objective measure of students' readiness for college and who the best students are going to be. Is it possible to have an objective, a non-subjective measure of these incoming students?
Probably not completely, no. I think any input we use will have, will suffer some critique. And I think the answer here is to make sure that we do a lot of, that internally in higher education, we both include multiple measures allowing students to really, a student who may not maybe underperforming in one area can show their strength in another area. So we want to use, multiple factors. At the University of California, for example, we use holistic review, where there's 14 factors, of which the SAT and ACT was just one until recently. It's been, it's not going to be utilized, right? And so it's just, but again, the standardized tests were just one of 14 factors. And I think we want to both balance sort of how many, what is looked at across campuses, along with clear investigations of sort of who benefits from certain inputs and who doesn't, particularly at selective admissions, which is a zero-sum game.
If somebody, McCall, came to you from a, say, big statewide public university system, whether that's California or Wisconsin, and said, McCall, what should we do when it comes to the SAT and ACT right now? What would your suggestions be?
Well, I think so. That's a tough one because I am in a state that has actually decided to do this. I think given our current environment and the stresses that students have been under, it's the right decision to have moved away from this test. I would say that I want to make sure that we have some at public universities have a really big responsibility to ensure that they're transparent and fair in how they do admissions. And I think we want to make sure that the inputs that we use, in fact, are seen as really open and accessible to all students. And while we continue to have really big disparities in some of our standardized tests, I believe they should be used with really great caution and should not be weighted so heavily in admissions. And so I applaud the University of California for rethinking the use of the SAT. And I also am encouraged by the fact that they're not necessarily abandoning tests altogether and are going to look closely at California standardized tests and the existing one or possibly a new one that would also make sure that students have other ways to demonstrate their abilities when applying for college.
We'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Michaela Kurlander is a professor and chair of the School of Education at the University of California, Davis. We talked to her about the growing number of colleges that say they'll no longer require admissions exams for applicants.